The only two things in life that make it worth living is guitars tuned good and firm feeling women. I don't need my name in the marquee lights. I got my song and I got you with me tonight. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas, with Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs and Newberry's train songs and Blue Eyes crying in the rain. Out of Lukenbach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain. So baby, let's sell your diamond ring, buy some boots and faded jeans and go away. This coat and tie is choking me, and in your high society you cry all day. Been so busy keeping up with the Joneses, four-car garage, and we're still building on it. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas, with Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs and Newberry's train songs and Blue Eyes crying in the rain. Out in Lukenbach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain.
Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas, William Waylon and boys. This successful life we're living's got us feuding like the Hatfields and the McCoys. Between the Hank Williams pain songs and Jerry Jeff train songs and Blue Eyes crying in the rain. Out in Lukenbach, Texas, there ain't nobody feeling no pain.
Good evening, America. This is your host, Chris Trail Dobek. That was Lukenbach, Texas by, Waylon Jennings. And up next, I'm going to play another little song just to get all my ducks in a line, if you will. I don't think that's the right phrasing of it. But up next is Sam and Dave's Hold On, I'm Coming.
Thank you.
All right. Good evening, America. There. Now we go. Okay. So, a couple things I did there while I was in between songs. Normally, I use what's called mic number 2 here. It's a nice little mic. It's made by... You know, honestly, I have no idea who it's made by. So, there goes a free vouching. Anyway, instead, I switched to the overhead hanging mic, which has a spit filter. And it's really kind of nice. You know, it's something that, I don't know, personally, I think is kind of good to have. So, yeah. Today's show is all about the Founding Fathers and basically their liberal and Republican traditions on the how the founding documents, as they're known, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, all of the like, are put together and, you know, are made under those traditions. So, you know, I don't think I'm coming through as clear on this one as I can hear myself, so I'm actually going to switch back to the other mic one moment. All right. And you'd think that I'd had years of experience on this. Eye roll. So, today's show, if you are on campus listening to this, just to let you know, over in Stuyvesant Hall in the Milligan Hub, and for those of you who can't remember what Milligan Hub is, myself included, right now going on is the Republican Mock Convention First Ice Cream Social of the Year. It's basically, for those of you who don't know what Mock Convention is, understandably, it's a once every 4 years, so you only get one chance on campus to do it, a simulation of the party on the outs chance to run a primary, see who all the candidates they're going to put in, and run that across the entire campus, see who we think would be the elected candidate. We have representatives from each state, state chairs. I'm helping out with the committee. I just signed up the other day. I made a logo. It's really exciting stuff. So if you are in Delaware, Ohio right now listening, you should mosey on over, turn off my show, and go to that, because that's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You can hear me rant about things basically any day of the week that you see me. So, today's show is, I'm going to be honest with you, it's probably a little less put together than traditionally how I do these sorts of things. I apologize to you guys. It's not fair to you. It's been one heck of a week. We have had two papers due, one due today, one due tomorrow, and that's no excuse by any means that, oh my god, you had, 12 pages worth of paper to write in 2 days. I tend to be pretty good about getting ahead on those sorts of things, and just stuff caught up, and all of a sudden I am way behind on everything, the show included. So for all 5 listeners, I sincerely apologize. So today's show might end up sounding a bit more like Andy Rooney on 60 Minutes. Do you guys remember who Andy Rooney is? You know, nice old man who basically complained about really whatever happened to bother him that week. Yeah, good inspiration for the tirade here. So, let's get started on the show. So without further ado, actually maybe with further ado, since I cannot, oh, there it is. All right, without further ado, I welcome you to the Chris Trail Tirade.
He's the madman of the Midwest, the common denominator of Cleveland, keeping the trails really trill. He's doing it for the people, the little engine who literally can't even. Live from Delaware, Ohio, it's the Chris Trail Tirade.
Right. So, again, good evening, good evening, good evening. So, when you think about it, the Constitution of the United States and the Declaration of Independence, those are out of order, but you know which how they should come in order, they are not very long documents when you think about it. If you'd think, and if I asked you, how do you write a document that is the moral guidelines for how you should run a government, and then I want you to write how the government should be run, you'd probably end up writing, oh, I don't know, 500 pages minimum? I don't know about you, but just there's so much in the world that I think would need to be covered in how a government is put together that you would assume that it would probably be no more than Or it would probably be just the largest work you could possibly fathom. I mean, there's always something that government could be involved in. Or at least, that's what some argue. You'd think it would be a long, 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 huge document for the moral guidelines. Moral guidelines actually might not be horribly long, but how to set up a government you would assume would be gigantic, right? Well, I guess that's not the case for everybody, since, well, our Constitution, as I'm looking here at my pocket Constitution, is exactly 31 pages. 31 pages, and it's smaller than an iPhone for all you millennials who are listening. It's a tiny, tiny document when you think about it. It's comprised of a grand total of 7 articles, and then, if I'm not mistaken here, just want to make sure I don't have this wrong, 27, yeah, okay, I was right, 27 amendments. That's not a huge thing. Yet, when you think about it, you'd probably want to make it pretty large yourself, and the Founding Fathers were not dumb people by any means. They were probably more intelligent than the average person you'd stop on the street, understandably so. If you're going to, you know, pull people to make a country, you'd hope that they'd be smarter than the average person on the street. But for all the knowledge that the Founding Fathers had at their disposal when drafting the founding documents of this United States, there were 2 ideological tenets that served as the backbone for a moral and legal basis for the country. If you heard last week, you would remember that I was talking very briefly about liberalism and republicanism. That's a little L liberalism and a little R republicanism. Those 2 traditions are the most influential in the birth of the nation here, at least in my opinion. And I'm not saying that things like, you know, people are always saying that, you know, the United States is a Christian nation and we're set up on Christian morals and fundamentals, or that we're what they call an ascriptive hierarchy, which is basically that certain people were kind of repressed and that's kind of how our nation was built upon the backs of oppressed peoples. I'm not saying that those don't have a place. Obviously, Christian influence and the United States has a long history of having some bad, bad moments in it. But I wouldn't say that in the pocket Declaration of Independence and Constitution of the United States, those 2 things are really the backbone of how this country was run. At least in my opinion. But to understand the influences of the Founding Fathers, one has to understand the fundamentals of traditions of liberalism and republicanism, how the Founding Fathers would have been likely to perceive those traditions in their day, and finally, where one can find their influences within those founding documents. So that's what I'd like to talk about here tonight. To start off here, liberalism and republicanism are, let's start off with liberalism. I think of any tradition of ideology that the United States is primarily based on, it's liberalism. What's liberal thought, you might be asking? Well, it's not the way that most people would construe it. If you turn on Fox News, they use the term liberal probably every 15 seconds. I exaggerate a little bit. But you'd see that things like this are pretty common. And, you know, we have a very certain description or image of what the word liberal means in our minds today. Not necessarily the same thing that you would assume liberal means to the Founding Fathers, for example. Liberal thought, basically connects the ideas of individualism and open expression as their personal principles. When you think about how that would be applied to a government, liberalism actually means that you should have a influential role in government, but government probably shouldn't have that much of an influential role with you. You see, this is kind of a common trend with most people back in the Revolutionary War time. As you'd probably expect that people who are feeling oppressed by their government of the king are probably not going to be wanting to be involved too much with any sort of government. When the United States was first set up, we were figuring out how we were going to, and I say we, not including myself and the Founding Fathers, but we as a people, were attempting to figure out how are we going to create a nation that is run, how are the states going to be involved and conjoined together, how are they going to be, you know, individual states, yet how are they also going to be intertwined with, say, New York and Georgia? It was a combination of different political jargons and governmental systems that no one necessarily knew how to do. There weren't really republics on the earth when the United States was put together. There were a couple, but for the most part, most of the republics that and democracies that these men were idolizing were a thousand years ago prior. So this was not something that they were just going to be able to model off of their neighbors. It was something they were going to have to kind of come up with themselves. In the liberal tenet, the Founding Fathers definitely would have thought that government shouldn't take a front seat role in our lives. Which, if you hear me talk, you normally wouldn't hear me say that. And there's certain movements that will go on in American history later on down the line that will probably kind of curtail that idea back a bit, you know, give government a bit more control. But according to what they would call natural rights, you as an individual really should not be involved with government other than the fact that government only gets its power by the limited rights that you give away to let a government function. An interesting thought, especially in the modern day traditions of the United States. Today we see that, I mean, it's hard to probably think about something you do every day where government isn't tied to it somehow. You touch a phone, there's phone line regulation, you go to get food, the FDA is involved. If you're if you are importing anything, you're probably paying an import tax at some degree on it. Government involvement today is vast beyond the way we can imagine it. And some might say that the Founding Fathers would not be pleased with how we've done that. And there are certain political historians who would say that the tradition of the United States is so that the United States citizens of modern-day America would presume and believe that we have directly taken down exactly what the Founding Fathers have believed from 1776 and are holding on to that exact same tradition, unchanged, unshaped, exactly the same raw state it has been since 1776. I'm paraphrasing, of course. Yet others are going to say that's not necessarily so. So, when I say liberalism here again, I just want to say that it's the individualistic, you know, you have the right to do what you want, the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, perhaps, and then the open expression therein. I'd like to read you the First Amendment, just because, you know, you should know your amendments. I think I should know my amendments, too. The First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America is as follows, quote, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people to peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. End quote. Now, for a liberal society that we are, and most political theorists that I've talked to, and, you know, that's a slim number, it's a slimmer number than it should be, would say that we are an incredibly liberal society in this regard. The individuals' rights are probably greater than almost any rights that anyone else can muster on this planet. What's interesting about that is that, you know, we read the First Amendment there, and it gives you the freedom of religion, or the freedom to exercise it, or to exercise to not do religion, the ability to speak freely and print freely, you know, be freedom of the press. You know, the news can produce whatever it wants as long as it's not within, I think, slander, basically blatant flat-out lies, so slander and libel, and the right of the people to peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. So you have the right to protest. You have the right to say to the government, I don't like how this is going. And the government can't say, tough luck, kiddo, and lock you away in jail for eternity. Oh, look, I just got an email from Bill Clinton. Why is that? It's, they're going to go on a total segue here for a moment. I signed up on Twitter over the summer. Hillary Clinton had an ad saying, have lunch with me and somebody, you know, you and a plus one have lunch or have dinner with me at my house or something. I said, that sounds great. I know exactly who I take along with me, close friend. And I said, hey, listen, you, if I was to win this, you hypothetically want to go? And they're like, sure. So I sign up. You know, they ask for my email, and I go, oh, of course, you know, they need my email, so that, therefore, you know, Hillary Clinton, if I was to win for some reason, I'm a sucker for, you know, chance draw lottos. If I was to win for some reason that, you know, she needs to email me somehow and contact me. They didn't ask for phone number, they only asked for my name, I think my first name, and my email address. Cool. Turns out that was just her mailing list. I mean, I assume that I also got entered into the contest. I don't know if that's still going on, or if a winner has been chosen, or if she's still waiting to choose a winner. I kind of hope I still have a chance to win that. However, I'm on Hillary Clinton's email list now, so that's something. Bill Clinton is doing personal emails right now because she is fundraising, because there's a deadline of some sort that needs to be met by tonight. I read in USA Today that I believe Jeb Bush and a couple other candidates are scrambling to meet this deadline by tonight. They probably all will make it, trust me. But that's just something I read, and so, anyway, back to the point of liberalism. You have the rights of freedom of speech, of freedom of the press, the right to assemble, and the right to, you know, say to the government, I don't like what we're doing. In our liberal society, we don't even think about it. You know, the right to speak freely, of course that's a right. Why wouldn't it be a right? Well, some places on Earth, and especially some places 229 years ago, would say, no, you do not have the right to do that. That is not an inherent or intrinsic right of the individual by any means. That's, you know, treasonous. It's dangerous. You're going to destroy the state by doing that. Something that, you know, we today as modern, you know, American liberals would say, that's just, you know, what we expect. It's the kind of thing that we see in the Declaration and the Constitution that every individual has the right to. And when I say individual, I don't mean, you know, your clan. I don't mean your nuclear family. I said nuclear family. You are to be, you know, the individual has an individual legal right. So, if I was to, and this works for both ways, so if, you know, good and bad, if I was to go out and hijack a car, I don't know why I would do that, I'm perfectly happy walking, but if I was to, for some reason, say, I really need to hijack a car, and I do it, they can't charge my parents with the legal right to go out and, or they can't charge my parents with my crime if they can't find me. They can only charge me, they'll put me up on, you know, a wanted poster, and then next thing you know, that's what the case will be, and once, you know, because my run won't be that long, they'll clearly see that I've, you know, that's the end of that, and so then I'm charged as an individual for carjacking. Liberalism in America. Something that, even today around the world, not everywhere are you going to see that. Certain places on Earth, if you pulled up a map, you would definitely find that it's not necessarily an individual's case, but it might be a tribal case. And tribal's such a dirty word nowadays. It brings bad connotations. I don't know what word I should use instead. Perhaps it's more of a small family grouping issue than it is the issues of just the individual. So let's talk about republicanism, because for many of you, you're probably saying, all right, Chris, we get it. We understand what liberalism is. It's the rights of an individual. Cool. Republicanism is not necessarily the opposite of liberal thought, but it does clash when the two ideological tenets kind of lack the same reasoning behind what they're doing. Republicanism is, as a tradition, can best be described as like social morality. It's the thought that basically, you know, what we have today is, you know, we have lots of things that are not, the millennials didn't create this country. We did not craft it. I was trying to say create and craft there, I apologize. Most of what the United States is built upon is upon the backs of, you know, people who were here before us and people who are still either here today or long gone. We stand by some of these ideas that, you know, our ancestors had, because they stand the test of time as, you know, logical, reasonable things that we would want to be invested in. Makes perfect sense to me. Republicanism is oftentimes that we want to make sure that those social standards are still abided by the next generation. And for all of you who might be saying that, oh, well, the millennials are, you know, heck in a handbasket, and, you know, it's all, we're watching the decline of culture with the beginning of the new age of hieroglyphics, and that millennials are truly the worst generation of all time. I'd like to remind those people that in Plato's Republic, Socrates complains that he was told that his generation was the worst of all time, and that the generation beneath him is called by his generation the worst of all time. This whole idea that everyone's next generation is the worst ever is might be kind of the coal to the fire of Republicanism ideology, or Republican ideology, I apologize. It encourages people to try and hold on to the way of life that we have it. In certain respects, this can be a good thing. I am 100% a proponent for democratic representative government. You know, I believe that we should have the right to vote for people who will lead us, and those people who we vote to lead us will get together and form a Congress who will basically go there and, you know, create laws and make sure that the country doesn't fall into, you know, utter disarray. It's not wholly unfeasible to realize that less than 100 years ago, we see people who are, and I use the term not loosely in the slightest, literal anarchists. You know, some people describe the modern Tea Party as anarchists, and of which, you know, you can have your opinion about the Tea Party whichever way you want it, but nowhere near do they come to the ideals of true, pure anarchy. I'm talking zero government. You know, the government's the creator of all social evils. It is the creator of all violence, be it police state, wars, you know, issues and laws. That the government is the ones that create the issues, because they're the ones who establish the laws, and that if we are to live in an anarchy-based society, I apologize, I'm not really sure what the adjective form of that would be. If we were to live in anarchistic society, I apologize again, that society and people who are morally good intrinsically would be the ruling majority, and that all would be well, and that nothing would happen because everybody would want to make sure that all would be well in the long run. This isn't necessarily, you know, it's a very idyllic sort of thing. A lot of people would probably say that it would seem nice on paper, implying that all people are naturally and morally good. I'd like to read a bit of Thomas Paine's Common Sense. You might have read this in grade school, or even earlier perhaps, or maybe in high school. Thomas Paine's Common Sense is probably one of the most important pamphlets in American history. Just a little excerpt about Thomas Paine. They cite him in the Norton Anthology of American Political Thought by Isaac Kramnik and Theodore J. Lowy, that Thomas Paine was, quote, a failure in every other profession he tried. The Englishman Thomas Paine, from 1737 to 1809, became spectacularly successful after his arrival in America in November of 1774. This radical Democrat started out as the editor of the Pennsylvania Magazine and later wrote in support of the revolutionary cause. His most important contribution was the anonymous pamphlet Common Sense, what I'm reading to you here today, which galvanized support for independence, end quote. It sold a ton of copies, a total of 500,000, which in that day, I mean, think about it, it's with a literal printing press. I'm talking, you know, you have to put the wood blocks on a sheet, you know, press it down, and there's your one sheet. Whew, that blows my mind how many copies that would be to sell. But in the beginning of his pamphlet of Common Sense, in the portion he calls On the Origin and Design of Government in General, with concise remarks on the English Constitution, which we won't get into the English Constitution for. I am in no way qualified to talk about the English Constitution. I'm really in no way qualified to talk about the American Constitution either, but I am a citizen of these United States, so I feel that I am entitled to be able to at least throw my opinion into the ring. He says, that some writers have, quote, some writers have been so confounded society with government as to leave little or no distinction between them, whereas they are not only different but have different origins. Society is produced by our wants, and government by our wickedness. The former promotes our happiness positively by uniting our affections, the latter negatively by restraining our vices, end quote. What Thomas Paine is saying here is that society is put together regardless of how people, you know, what government exists or doesn't exist. People are naturally cooperative. We want to be together. We can't, you know, the next generation can't come about by a single individual. You need two to tango, if you will. Every part of the human existence is that you want to be around other people. That's kind of what some anarchists are arguing in the same sort of sense, that everybody is commonly good and that society will form and these small bands of society will be together and that all will be well and it'll be far better than any evil government can be. I say contraire. See, that sounds almost kind of nice on paper, and I'm not vouching for anarchism by any means. But, you know, if you believe, like myself, that people are inherently good, you would say, all right, perhaps she's right. Or perhaps that I'm thinking of a specific anarchist named Emma Goldman, who lived in the late 1800s and early 1900s, who basically said exactly that. However, people have a lot of horrible ideas. Have you ever, I mean, you can probably think back to a time where you thought, oh man, why have I never thought of this before? And it seemed like the smartest thing you've ever come up with. And then it, for all intensive purposes, just blows up in your face. I mean, not literally, but figuratively. And you go, well, that was stupid. I am never doing that again. Perhaps it was a specific fashion style you can think of. Maybe it was, perhaps, you know, oh, I put this together. I built a catapult in my backyard out of sticks. And you pull down on the string and the whole catapult comes apart. People are full of stupid ideas. That really is no exception when forming small groups of people. One of the things when I came off to college here, every teacher in high school told me, whatever you do, if you're going to college with a friend of yours from high school, don't room with them. Actually, they said don't room with your friends in general. Ironically, my friends in college here are my roommates. Funny how that worked out. But it seems like a good idea. Here's where Republican tradition is, you know, coming into play, though. My teachers, and mind you, they're not lawmakers, but if they were lawmakers, would say, you do not have the ability to, you know, room with your friends in college because we have gone through that and it was a terrible ordeal. Okay. A liberal ideology would say, I have the right as an individual to make my own decision. I have the right to express that I want to live with my roommate slash friend from high school. And therefore, I have the right to do that. Republican tradition, on the other hand, we're jumping a little bit ahead, would say, no, that's not the case. Culturally, we don't do that. We think it's improper. You should go out and meet new people. It doesn't work for us. Just take our advice on it. And this is where the things kind of come head to head. It's the social good of time-tested wisdom and then individual rights, because sometimes groups don't necessarily make the right idea, and that's what I'm getting at with the anarchism point, that small groups, even small groups working for the good of society, don't always make the best idea. So you see where the kind of clashing of an issue comes here? It's the individual versus a social group. Now, I've mulled this over again and again and again, mostly because I'm working on a paper on it, and when I'm saying working, I mean really just kind of editing a last couple pages here, but it, both sides are good and both sides are flawed, if you will. And you kind of have to think of it from different perspectives. You know, be a little nuanced with me here. From the individual's perspective, which we're all individuals, you know, yay, we're special snowflakes, hooray! From the individual's perspective, we don't like being told what we can and cannot do. Yep. I can think of a million different examples in the news of people saying, man, I have the right to be able to do this, and it's my right, and I'm an individual, and I can make my own decisions of whether or not I make a stupid choice. Drugs, firearm possessions, voting a specific way. Back in the 1950s during McCarthyism, you know, the House Committee for Un-American Activities, HWAC, would ask people if they had ever been part of the Communist Party, which at that time had been outlawed. And the individual say, well, it's my right to want to be part of the Communist Party. If I want to be a communist, by all means, I will vote as a communist. Instead, the Republican tradition, though, from the government's perspective, and mind you, not every bit of Republican tradition needs to come from the government. There's two sides to this in groups. There's government and society. The government and largely American society at the time would say, we know what the dangers of communism are. We've seen it fail in Russia. We've seen it fail in China. We're going to see it fail in Indochina, they say. And from there, everything's going to come crashing down. And, if the United States becomes communist, everything's going to fall apart. That's the Republican tradition. Our tradition is a free market capitalism, and we're not going to have that tainted or changed. And you see where it comes head-to-head. Now, for an example that might make a different side of it, you can see that, that side's more for the, perhaps the why republicanism can be correct. Let's look at it from a stance where you would see it from the liberal perspective. You would say, in modern days, I can recall this summer when the Supreme Court said that gay marriage is the law of the land across all 50 states. You are entitled as a United States citizen to be able to marry whoever you want. Perfect. This is something in liberal tradition would say, well, it's my choice. I love this person. So for me, it would be I love this guy. I want to get married to him. Okay. Republican side, little r guys, Republican side of this would say, well, our social standing, in some states that is, that our social standing is that we do not allow this because we do not believe it to be moral, we do not believe it to be just, we believe it to be unnatural, and therefore we shall keep it outlawed. Of course, when these sorts of things go head-to-head, this is how court cases arise, this is how, things get taken to the Supreme Court, and this is how kind of America is crafted to say, where do we stand? Now, personally, I think that the Supreme Court case was a very good thing that happened. As my, liberal right, I think that every American should have the opportunity to marry whomever they want. And as one comedian said, let everybody be as miserable as us. All right, great, dude. For the record, though, I also approve of marriage. I think that marriage is a good thing. I would not diss that in the slightest. So, his joke kind of lost the humor on me, but you see what I'm kind of getting at here is that the anti-gay marriage stance wasn't uncommon 20 years ago. It was Bill Clinton who signed into law the Defense of Marriage Act. He did not veto that, guys. He said, this is something that we are going to defend marriage in the United States as a one man, one woman. 20 years ago, 1995, I want to say, that was enacted into law. And the social standings of, traditions of years past sometimes change into the modern era. Nowadays, we would say that and go, oh my God, one man, one woman, that's just not, you're more than allowed to marry somebody of one man, woman, but you shouldn't necessarily say that everybody has to go through that. That's just not right. Everybody is entitled to love who they love. And so nowadays that's just an abhorrent thought to think. But sometimes the Republican tradition can kind of fade away, and sometimes the liberal thought can be pervasive. And now you're probably saying, all right, Chris, let's talk about the other side. Think of a time when your liberal rights have been stripped away, and that it's, the Republican social mores, that everything that's, if it's better for society, it's better to give away a little bit of your rights to do that instead of, let the individual run amok. good point. Probably one of the best points in American history to choose for that is Prohibition. We see all through American history, alcoholism has been just a serious issue with us. One of the most important religious groups in the early stages of the early Republic are the Quakers, who are very anti-drinking, kind of the founders of the temperance movement. The more west and west we go, we see, you know, these young people, you know, young people going into the West, you know, drinking their livers silly and destroying themselves and, you know, becoming, you know, downright alcoholics. And frontiersmen, you know, although I imagine them as kind of John Wayne-y types, you know, older guys who are, you know, rough and tumble, these could be people as young as 12. And so by the 1930s, basically everybody's saying, actually by the 1920s, people are saying that alcohol is a social immorality. It's not right. It should be gotten rid of. And so they established the 18th Amendment, and I quote, Section 1, quote, "After 1 year from the ratification of this article, the manufacture, sale, or transportation of intoxicating liquors within, the importation thereof into, or the exportation thereof from the United States and all territories subject to the jurisdiction thereof for beverage purposes is hereby prohibited. Section 2, Congress shall, and the several states shall have concurrent power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Section 3, this article shall be inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by the legislatures of the several states as provided in the Constitution within 7 years from the date of submission hereof to the states by the Congress." This is a moment where people would say, you know, if I want to drink alcohol, you know, I have the God-given right to drink as much as I please. And social morals of the time said, no, you don't. It destroys families, it destroys lives, it destroys your potential. We're doing the right thing by going out and saying, you know, that we as a society and as a government are outlawing liquor. So, ultimately, you do see that one actually kind of fade away. Again, as you probably can figure out now, alcohol is perfectly legal in the United States once you're at the age of 21. And it's still considered kind of socially immoral. It is considered socially immoral to be, you know, a drunkard. However, you can see where Republican tradition can kind of come from. The Founding Fathers, in all respects, had, you know, a variety of views on all these things. As you've probably been listening to me, you might agree with some of the things I've been saying and for my examples, and some of them you might have been wholeheartedly disagreeing with. There's nothing wrong with believing either way. However, you got to understand that the people who were writing the Constitution and the people who wrote the Declaration of Independence, I'm sorry that I keep doing those backwards, I probably should do that chronologically. However, the people who wrote those also had their own opinions, and they didn't always mesh. So when they put those together, next thing you see is that, well, basically, long story short, these issues, that's where we decide what we become as a country. You know, do we let the liberal perspective prevail, that the individual has the right to do as they please? Or do we go for social order and social progress and try and say that for the good of society that we're not going to allow things? These are the great struggles of liberalism and republicanism in the United States today. And, yeah, that's more or less the case that be. So that's really all I have here for you guys this evening. I apologize that it's not been as cohesive, as clear, as put together. I'll be honest with you, I'm much more of a history guy than I am a politics guy. Modern politics can be kind of elusive to me. Sometimes I don't follow along as well as I do with history, mostly because I can see the end result, so I kind of can figure out from there. Next week we'll probably, because your herniated host here is getting his hernia surgery, we will probably be having my roommate and host friend, DJ Sean McCart, who will be doing a musical hour of his choosing, provided that it's, you know, within social mores. Hey, there's republicanism for you. And so I'm going to just play you off with a couple of songs here. I think we're going to go with some Finnish polka, because everybody needs some Finnish polka. A country music song it's really just kind of, you know, liberalism in general. And then if we still have time, we'll see from there. So let's start off with some Finnish polka. Thanks so much, guys, and have a great night. Au revoir. Polka-di, 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 polka-
niputti kukutti. Hievan äiti se tyttö se vahti, vaan kyllähän Ieva se jutti. Sillä ei meitä silloin kiellot haittaa, kun me tanssimme laijasta laitaa. Salkeli puttutta, tappu täppittikut hiljalleen. Ievan suu oli vehnää, sellä koimme se tonne toivotti. Pää oli märkänä jokaisella ja viulu se vonkuja voivotti. Ei tänä paikoo märkyys haittaa, sillä se laskoo laijasta laitaa. Salkeli puttutta, Ievan äiti se kammaarissa virsiä veisata huijutti, kun tämä poika naapurissa ämmän tyttöön huijutti. Eikä tätä poikoo ämmät haittaa, sillä kalaskoo lahjasta laitaa. Salivili puttu putta putä pytti hiljalleen. Hilipase 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 hilipa hilipase hilipase hilipa. Siellä oli lystiä soitoi jälkeen, sain minä kerran sykkyteet. Ottiko mäntini ämmä se riitel ja Ieva jo alaton nyhkyteet. Minä sanon Ievalle, mitäpä se haittaa, laskema vielä hilajasta laitaa. Salivili hipputtu, putta, putet, pytti, put hiljalle. Muorille sanoi, jota tukkee suusien, ruppesin selvetä stakkoomaan. Terveenä riesettu korjoluusi ja määt sitä murjuus makkoomaan. Ei tätä paikoo hellyys, haittako atva ja hukkii lajasta laitaa. Salivili hipputtu, putta, putet, pytti, put hiljalle. Sen minä sanoin, jota purra pitää, ei mua niin voi nielasta. Suot mä näin ite vaikka lännestä ittävä, minä en luovu Ievasta.
Sillä ei tätä poikoo kainous haittaa, sillä kun tanssii lajasta laitaa. Salivili hipputtu, putta, putet, pytti, put hiljalle.
So yeah, hi again, guys. That was, oh god, I have to try and pronounce polka here. It's known as Ieva's Polka in 1996. I was 1 year old when that came out by Loituma. I think that's right. And then for our last song of the evening, much more about liberalism here. It's called Follow Your Arrow by Casey Musgraves. Thanks so much again, guys, and have a great night.
Person. trips round the sun.